chapter and the 66th and 67th verse, just to start us out this morning. John, the 6th chapter, verses 66 and 67. I want to speak on a thought, just simply undaunted. Undaunted. Of all the characteristics that God looks for and is expecting from us, it's not in the things that we look for. We spend so much of our time worried about our image, our dress, our denomination, our whatever it is that we get caught up in our religious world. We get caught up in so many different areas and so many different things. And really what God is simply looking for when He picks people, when He chooses them and says these simple words, follow me. All He's looking for in our lives is that can we be undaunted by whatever He brings, whatever He speaks, whatever challenges He brings into our life. It's not a matter of us creating them or not creating them. The disciples didn't do anything to cause the storms to come up on the sea. They didn't do anything to cause people to be blind or to deal with this. But what God wanted them to see through Jesus Christ as His walking through this world and doing ministry is how Jesus was undaunted by whatever situation, whatever circumstance. He knew that it was in the hands of the Father, and the Father was directing every step of His life. And this is the hardest part of trying to get this across to people, because it's so easy for us to revert back to something we like and to something that's easier for us to figure out. It's just as simple as, if it's a woman preacher, then I don't believe in it. Or if it's this, if it's that. And we find things and areas and situations, and we just simply build our own little small theology around it. And the relationship then with God is never existent. And we wonder why we don't have life or seem like God uses us. It's because we're unusable. It's because we already have a view of what the world is, and we already have a view of the way it should be, and God can't enter into our thinking. What God wants is just us to be undaunted as He walks this thing through with us, and He shows us life from several different vantage points. Now, Jesus has to deal with this. In verse 66 and 67 of this chapter, these simple phrases are stated. It said, from that time, many of His disciples went back and walked no more with Him. Then said Jesus unto the 12, will you also go away? Will you also leave me? Now, I need to kind of set you up on this. Jesus has put a new way of seeing following Him and a new way of seeing life. And He's brought it out, and it isn't just that He has 12 disciples. We find out at times past He sent out 70 disciples in different times. He didn't have just 12 that hung around. He had a band of women that did the cooking most of the time, that followed them, that took care of their needs in that way. He had multitudes of disciples that were following Him. In fact, thousands of people at times. He could not go from one side of Galilee on a ship and get to the other before thousands would run around the side of the Lake of Galilee and be waiting for Him on the other side. So don't get it in your mind that it was just these few 12 walking around with Jesus. Most of the time, the crowd was immeasurable. He simply would teach downhill, or He would get into boats where everybody could hear Him. Jesus drew enormous crowds and followers. But as He began to get closer to Jerusalem, and as He began to teach them in ways that wasn't normal to them, He would trickle away, or He would lose them, or He would end up having them walk away from Him. And this situation is no different. Jesus begins to preach a sermon. And in verse 51, we read this, and she may have this, and if not, just go along with me. In verse 51, it just simply says, I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. And the Jews, therefore, strove among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? I mean, of all the things that you could tell a Jewish person to eat flesh. I mean, these are people that are staunch in what they can eat, can eat. Later, Peter won't even, when God offers him food, eat it. These people, when Jesus said, you got to learn to eat of my flesh and drink my blood. What was one of the main decrees that they could not do? They couldn't eat anything strangled. They couldn't eat anything where the blood was coming out. I've met with a lot of people that in life that still struggle with that. They can't eat their steak medium rare or close to that because there's blood still coming out of it. And they feel like, man, God's, I mean, that's not godly to do that. And so I honor that, and that's fine because so much is built in that you cannot taste the blood, cannot eat the blood. It must be fully cooked. It must be this. And so when Jesus stands up and mentions two things that would stick out to them, you've got to eat my flesh and you've got to drink my blood, this would be a major turnoff to their religion. So notice what Jesus begins to do. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except you eat my flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. He doesn't even say it would be a nice suggestion. He doesn't even say, if you guys would like to. He says, look, if you don't do it, you got no life at all. You're just walking dead men. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He doesn't let up on this. And he that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father hath sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, I mean, he just will not let that up. Even he shall live by me. This is that bread which came down from heaven, not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forever. Skip down with me to verse 61. Then Jesus knew in himself that the disciples murmured at it, and he said to them, doth this offend you? I like that. You ever had conversations with God, and God comes along and says, does this bother you? Well, Lord, you know it bothers me. I've been praying about it for 3 weeks. Oh, no, this is not good for you? You don't like this? And Jesus, knowing their thoughts, just kind of asked that question. Are you guys having a problem with this? Verse 62. What if you shall see the Son of Man ascend up where he was before? Now, here's the key verse. It is the Spirit that does what? That quickeneth. The flesh profiteth nothing. The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life. But there are some among you that believe not. For Jesus knew that from the beginning who that were that believed not and who should betray him. And he said, therefore said I unto you that no man can come unto me except it be given unto him of my Father. Jesus says, let me see if I can show this to you. I know you won't understand it, but I want to see if I can get this to you guys. Every time I say something to you, it's always in your flesh, and you always think fleshly. In times past, Jesus would look at them and say, be careful of the leaven of the Pharisees. And the disciples would say, he's talking about bread. We're not supposed to eat their bread. We're not supposed... And Jesus would say, you don't get it. When Jesus would change from a physical to a spiritual, he would always lose his disciples. When he'd start saying, you got to eat my flesh and drink my blood, they would think fleshly, literal. And they would go, ugh. When he would talk about different subjects and subject matter and would change it from a physical to a spiritual, he would always lose them. And on this occasion, he does the same thing. He says, let me explain this to you. The flesh is going to profit you absolutely nothing in this life. What you eat, what you drink, how you live, what clothes you wear, your income, your job, all the things that are evolved around flesh will eventually profit you nothing. I've seen this so many times in my life, and probably the one that sticks in my mind the most is a guy that lived right across the street from us for several years. He was an old bachelor. He had three or four big old sheds out in his yard, and he had accumulated everything. I'd come over, and he'd show me old organs he had taken out of old churches. This guy had collected stuff, gotten stuff, just his whole life. Well, he ended up passing away. And I remember just so vividly walking outside one morning, and his family had showed up at his house, and they had all had trucks, and they all threw in the back what they wanted. And at the road was probably enough garbage bags to fill this front part of this stage up. His whole life, his clothes, his everything that he had worked for, everything they didn't consider junk was taken. Everything else was put in glad bags and sit at the road, and I watched the garbage men. I know you look like, oh, that's so sad. No, it's not. It's sad that you think yours won't go the same way. You think your kids are going to want your old clothes? When you die, they're going to say, look, we got to get rid of it. Just give it to Salvation Army. You think them old knickknacks that you thought were so precious, they're going to say, you are not putting that in my house. That's the ugliest thing, and I kept telling Mom for years to get rid of that thing. See, our problem is that we can't think a lot of times like Jesus does. And Jesus said, look, your flesh is going to profit you absolutely nothing. Whatever it is you're working for, whatever it is you think you're going to leave, it'll all go back to dust. It'll all erode. It'll all deteriorate. Houses that you see built and you drive by, sheds and things that you see 100 years old, you think, when they built that, they thought, man, now that is it. Now someone just wants to tear it down so they can get the wood out of it. It's life. And Jesus said, look, flesh profits you nothing. It is the spirit, and it is the spiritual things that will allow you to have real life. And life that will sustain and last. Jesus later would teach Paul this. Of all Paul's writings, while he was in jail and in different places, none are more important than the writings he wrote about this transition from the flesh to the spirit. I want to show you three areas that Paul understood that a lot of us don't before we go back to this chapter 6. Number one is this, is that we have to be undaunted when we're going to walk in this relationship and step from our spiritual and step into our spiritual life and step out of our fleshly life. We're going to have to be undaunted in this first area. We must be undaunted amid the crowd of things in our life. Look at that person beside you and say, does stuff bother you? Go with me in your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 4. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 4 through 12. 2 Corinthians 6. And let's read this. Paul is writing about this area. He's talking about amid the crowd of things that is always in my life. I tell people all the time, this is the one season of my life that has been the hardest balancing act. Because I have three children, I have all the things going on. Yesterday, when I would, you know, personally prefer to come to the church, hang out till midnight, I told one guy to go riding bikes, enjoyed that, got back, I had just enough time to run and go get crickets, and I promised Caitlin I'd go fishing till dark, and by that time I was wore out, and by the time I sat down to 8 o'clock after dark and got everything else straightened out, then I finally said, I'm just going to pass out. And I'm just going to get here as early as I can in the morning. And I'm just going to... Anybody know what life is when it's just like there's never... It's just seasons. And right now, it's a season to where I have to be real careful because of all the stuff that crowds my life. And I have to settle things amid the crowdedness of my life. Listen to how Paul would describe it. But in all things, approving ourselves as to ministers unto God. Now, when we say all things, we like to think, well, among my studying and among my work and my devotional life and my prayer life, and I'm a minister. That's not what Paul mentions. Paul said, among all the things, I am still a minister. In the middle of all the things that I'm in life about, I am a minister. What things? In much patience, in afflictions, in necessities, in distresses, in stripes, in imprisonments, in turmoils, in labors, in watchings, in fastings, in pureness, in knowledge, in long-suffering, by kindness, by the Holy Ghost, by love unfeigned, by the word of truth, by the power of God, by the armor of righteousness on the right hand and on the left, by honor and dishonor, by evil report and good report, by deceivers and yet true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as chastened and not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as poor yet making many rich, as having nothing and yet possessing all things. O ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you, our heart is enlarged. Ye are not straitened in us. And here's the word. When he says you are not straitened, he said you are not restrained in us. When we feel restrained, when we feel we want to put somebody to blame, don't we? Well, if it wasn't for such and such, if it wasn't for this, if it wasn't for that, I could get more, I could do more, I could. It's just our human nature, and Paul is the same way, and the Corinthians are the same way. They're like, if it wasn't for Paul doing this, if it wasn't for all this stuff they've been bringing on us, if it wasn't for this. And Paul says, you are not restrained in us, but you are restrained in your own bowels or your own afflictions. In the own things that you keep inside, that you keep fighting with, you cause yourself to be restrained and to be unproductive. And Paul said, I have learned. Of all the things I have learned that no matter what state that I'm in, whether in prison or free, whether I got money or I don't have money, whether I've got this or I've got that, I've learned that amid all the things that life is going to bring, among all the problems and troubles and difficulties and calamities and the good and the bad, he doesn't mention just bad, it's all mixed in together. Amid all of the life's activities, I have learned one thing. And this is the thing that I've learned, is that God's relationship is the supreme relationship that I have to have. This is the first thing that you've got to grasp. Because the problems or the troubles or the situations are not just going to disappear. They're always going to be part of your life. Some of you in here keep blaming other people. Some of you keep blaming your situation. It's not that. It's the problem that it's the fact that all of these things are always going to take on. But you have not established the greatest relationship so that amidst all of these problems and trials and difficulties and situations that you can rise above them and keep God at the center above all of it. Let me see if I can show it to you a little further. You're at 2 Corinthians 4. And I'm in the dark. Anybody knows that little knob back there? I would appreciate that. There we go. That works wonders. At the end of verse 12, you have gotten to the point to where he says, listen, but you are not straitened in us, but you are straitened in your own bowels. All right, now Paul explained this to us. Well, Paul does. Go with me to verse 14. He says, be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? He says, listen to me. It's not me that's causing you the problem. It's the relationships that you keep establishing, trying to entangle them with God's relationship. And because you keep doing this, it's causing you strain and it's causing you stress. It's causing you problems. It's funny because when people come to me, for advice a lot of times, it's not complicated answers. It's not difficult questions. When they say, what do I need to do? Well, you need to dump that friend. Oh, yeah, but you don't understand. We grew up together and oh. See, I'm not causing you the problem. And God's not causing you the problem. It's your own relationships that's causing you the problem. And that's what Paul was saying. He said, you're establishing relationships and you're establishing things in your life. Brother, how do I need to handle this? Well, you just need to be quiet. What do you mean be quiet? You just need to be quiet. Don't do anything. Let God take care of it. Oh, Pastor. It's not complicated answers. If every one of you here stood up and said, here's my biggest problem, I promise you it wouldn't take me but a second to give you the answer. That's not the problem. The problem is that there's a relational situation that you've connected somewhere else. The way you see life, the way you do life, the way you act in life, and because of this, it's causing you the problem with God. And here's the main thing that you have to establish, is that my relationship with God has to be the supreme relationship that I have. Why? Go with me to verse 16. And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. And God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall what? Be my people. He doesn't end there. He said, wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord God Almighty. It's real simple. Brother Lon, I just don't feel like me and God are close. Then what relationship have you established that's causing that feeling? I just don't feel like I'm where I need to be. Then what relationship have you established that's causing you that feeling? It won't take very long. Just start talking about the things you do. Start talking about the places you go. Start talking about the people you're hanging around. And it won't take me very long to tell you, you got to dump that, and you got to quit that, and you got to stop doing that. But then what am I going to do? Then you're going to run to the relationship you have with God. And where you had those things, you're going to replace them with God. And you're going to make God the number one relationship that you have in your life. Because if you don't, then all the circumstances of life and all the things that go on in your life on a normal daily activity, if you're not careful, you'll start judging your relationship by those things. I know some good religious people who will tell you if you got a flat tire, you must have done something wrong. Because you know why? Because they don't have a relationship with God, they have to substitute it with the things that look like a relationship with God. And they have to have an excuse for all the calamity in life. Imagine if Paul had been your pastor. How are you going to explain to everybody in Forest that your pastor is in jail this weekend? Most of you just quit this church and go to the other church. Well, I'm going to go somewhere where, you know, that pastor, he's just off the wall. He gets in jail all the time. He keeps getting in trouble. I mean, he's been accused of everything. Paul said, listen, if you're going to base that as a form of your relationship, you are going to be a sorry Christian. Because the fact is that as you are a Christian, then there will always be rumors, there will always be things said, there will always be people quitting and starting and coming and going. That's why Jesus looks at the disciples and said, will you quit me too? You hear everybody murmuring. You hear everybody talking. You hear everybody say, you want to quit too? Here's what you need to understand. Is my relationship with you going to be the number one relationship? Is it going to override what everybody else says, what everybody else thinks, what everybody else does? Are you going to be able to not be ashamed of me and still stand here when everybody else is going to laugh at you? That's what relationships do. That's what relationships do. Most of us don't want relationship. We just want to simply be in a good, safe place where we can come and brag about our music and talk about our church and talk about this. And you need to come because it's cool and it's a great place to hang out and it's all this. But beyond that, are you ever going to get to a place to where your relationship with God is above every other relationship, so that no matter what takes place, if I have a flat tire today, God still loves me. If I go through and I get sick by some reason and have to take medicine for a couple of days and get well, God still loves me. It has nothing to do with the calamities that go on in life. I don't look for God's hand in my every trouble or my every success. God doesn't love me because I'm doing good, and He doesn't hate me because I'm doing bad. The disciples kept judging it that way. Peter even got so bold one time that he went to Jesus when Jesus kept running off some people, and he said, "Lord, you're going to have to quit preaching this stuff." And what does Jesus tell him? "Get behind me, Satan." Why? Because this is what it's about. There's sometimes I say things, it doesn't go over good. Or sometimes I say things and people think, "Boy, I just needed that." The same people that walk out the back door that won't shake my hand and look at me like, "I don't know why he preached, I don't know why." They're the same people that sat right by you that shake my hand and say, "That was me. That, I mean, if you didn't preach to nobody else, it was me." If you don't have a relationship thick enough that if everybody walks away, you're okay, then you don't have a good relationship. Number two, and I've got to hurry. The second part of this, Paul would teach us later in Romans. Go with me to Romans, the 8th chapter. So number one is that the God's relationship is my supreme relationship. Amid the crowd of things, I have to establish that that relationship is supreme. Number two, Romans 8 and 35 through 39. Now once I get that situated, then I have to move to this. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? Verse 36. As it is written, "For thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all things we are more than conquerors through Him that loved us." Verse 38. "For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor power, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus our Lord." Now we're not talking about the same type of perils. We're not talking about distresses, and we're not talking about the same type of distresses. He's moved up a level in this. He understands that everything in my life is not based on my relationship with God. But here is the key. As I live for God on a day-to-day basis, in my personal devotional life, amid my personal devotional life, I am going to have to establish that there are going to be things that are going to be contrary. There are going to be fights, and there are going to be difficulties, and there are going to be people who are going to fight against, and spirits that are going to fight against, and things that are going to fight against what God calls the I do's of my life. If I'm going to keep my marriage together, then I understand that amidst my devotional life to God, there are going to be attacks coming from that side. Amidst my devotional life to God, there are going to be attacks that are going to come upon my kids. There are going to be attacks that are going to come in all areas and forms. And this becomes now the next level in which I have to establish it. If I'm in relationship with Christ, and now I'm devoted to Christ, then I have to establish number two, is that I'm loved. Paul had to establish in his life, as we do, that if I'm going to follow him now as a Christian, as a devoted follower, is that I have to realize that he loves me, that he actually cares for me, that he actually knows what's best for me. In the midst of all of my difficulties and all of my trials and all of my circumstances, God's love remains. Because if I'm going to build my relationship built on the devotional life with God, I'm watching my son go through it right now. He's doing the 3-month process, doing the discipleship course, and along with a lot of our other young people. And it's amazing watching him, because he's struggling, as they should. Because what you're having to do is you're having to figure out, you know, Dad, I didn't get to just kneel down and pray like I normally do. And I'm like, well, you can pray anywhere. You can talk to him anywhere. In fact, he's going to talk to you throughout your day. Those are the things that you're wanting to remember, the things you talked about, the things he showed you. And I watch him, and I wish a lot of times I could go back and do it again. I do. I'd love to go back and be 15, 16. Not to be going through all the stuff again, but the relationship part. I remember those days when I established that he loves me. Even when I fall, and even when things aren't going well, and even in my devotional life that seems to be up and down, and some days I feel like I'm strong, and some days I feel like I'm weak. But it was fighting through to establish that he loves me. That me and him are in this thing. Even when I am totally weak, and I don't feel like caring anymore, and I don't feel like doing it anymore, that he just comes along and says, Tim, I'm not giving up on you. I mean, I tell God, you just want us to quit. Go, just give up. Just go on. And it'd be another service. And then all of a sudden, I could feel God wrap his arms. I'm like, God, I done told you I can't do all this. And God's like, it's not about it. I love you. Understand this, Tim. Neither height, nor depth, nor angel, nor demonic spirit, nor things present, nor things past will ever separate my love from you. Now, there's things in our lives that constantly are separating us. Some days I don't do enough Bible reading. Some day I don't seem like I do enough praying. Some day I don't feel like I do enough of this. Some days I don't feel like I was a good disciple. I don't feel like I witnessed very well. I don't feel like I was a good husband or a good dad or a good this. In my devotional life, sometimes I don't feel like I reached the mark. But here's the thing that I've realized. They'll never be separated between me and God. His love. It's never separated. If you went out and did the worst thing you could think of today, I don't want you to. But if you did, you'd have to come back and say, God, I'm sorry. You'd have to say, God, I didn't mean to. You'd have to repent. You'd have to apologize. But you know one thing that would have never changed? His love. That's what surprises us so many times. Because we come back and thinking he's going to be disdained with us. We come back thinking he's going to have this, well, you know I'm going to have to punish you. You know our relationship's going to be suffering for at least 6 years before I can come back and really trust you again. No, that's our earthly parents. That's our earthly friends. That's the way they treat us. Well, I forgave you, but it's going to take a while. God doesn't operate that way. God is like the father in the prodigal son after he's done spent all the dad's money, after he's done wasted everything, got no clothes, got no anything. When the son comes walking back up, the dad sees him coming. He immediately runs to him. The boy is trying to tell him, Dad, I don't deserve this. And the boy, and the dad is kind of saying, Son, shut up. Shut your home, son. That's all that matters. That's all that's important. You're here. That's all. He don't think the way we do. He doesn't come back with a, I told you so. That's us. That's our wickedness. But when God sees us, he runs and he says, Get a ring. Dad, I'd like to tell you some of this stuff. I don't even care, son. It's not important. Do you understand? I never stopped loving you. But you don't know what I've done. I never stopped loving you. In our way, that's the hardest step for us to make sometimes, because we know the things we did and we know why we did them and we know how bad we feel about them. But God sits up there all the time saying, I'd love to just put my arms around you. If you want to know what that looks like, look at Jesus standing over Jerusalem right before Jerusalem is going to kill him. Jerusalem, he knows, is fixing to kill him. The Pharisees, the Sadducees, all of them are fixing to kill him. And he looks over at them, and with tears in his eyes, he overlooks the city and says, How I would have loved to have taken you and gathered you together in my arms. When he hangs on a cross and he's got no strength left and he's got nothing left, and you would think, well, now he's had enough. Now he's finally. No, he looks down from the cross, and even though they've done their worst, even though they've spit on him, they've shoved vinegar in his mouth, they've crowned him with thorns, they've beat him, they've nailed him to a tree, they've done their very best, and he still looks at the Father and says, forgive them. Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. That's love. That's love that we scarcely can grasp. And it's only when we first establish the relationship with Him and we start walking in our bumbling way and we start walking in our messing up way and we start walking along and we start realizing He don't give up on me. He doesn't quit on me. He doesn't stop on me. He doesn't just say that's enough. He just continually loves me. He continually keeps loving me. He continually, every time I'm willing to run to Him, runs back to me. That's the kind of love that He has for you. Number three. The third thing that Paul would describe to us in being undaunted. So I'm undaunted in my relationship. I'm undaunted in the fact that God's love remains for me. Go with me to Galatians 2, verses 19 through 21. Galatians 2, 19 through 21. Let me tell you why a lot of what we teach won't work in church. It's because we teach it backwards. What we do is we teach people to relinquish and to give themselves to God. You're asking somebody to do this who's not made it through step one or step two. You're asking someone to relinquish their life into the hands of somebody that you said is good and you said cares for them and you said loves them and you said all this, and we come to an altar and we tell them that you just need to give your whole life to God. I grew up in those churches that if you really got it, from Sunday morning when you got saved to Sunday night, you done found a place to get a haircut and got new clothes and done all, I mean, you are serious. The only problem was the stuff that didn't get taken care of, that was supposed to have gotten taken care of, since now we were supposed to be fully saved and fully committed, we just hid. We just hid the rest. Whatever didn't get zapped the first time or good and taken care of in that way, we just kept it under wraps. And then we looked at other people and they need God. See, the whole premise is that if I start off in relationship with Him, realizing that in good and bad, in the things and go on in life and sickness and in health and all the problems, that I'm loved. Let's look at it like a married couple. The married couple stands in front of an altar and they say to the preacher, I will love you. And that's what they promise. I promise I will love you. In sickness and health, for better, for worse, for this. They're establishing the relationship that they have. And if you just watch them when they first stand up there, you would think that, man, they are sold out to each other. I mean, they are, whoop, isn't it? I mean, they just got suits on and white dresses and they're looking at each other and they're all smiling and they've dressed up as good as they can and they are looking at each other and they're saying, I love you. In reality, what they're saying is, I want a relationship with you. That's all they're really saying. And look, because this is as good as it will ever be, so if I could ever get you to say, I do, I'm doing my best right now. All the flowers. Got food afterwards. Brought all our friends and family. Pressure's on. Will you go into relationship with me? Then phase two. Then we have to establish whether that person actually loves us. And when we say loves us, it means not just among the normal thing, but it means as life goes, can they establish true love in our life? If that person can prove to us and show us that they really love us. Because here's what happens. If we stood in front of the altar and we did all that, and then all of a sudden the person sits down and doesn't help us with the dishes, doesn't help us with the clothes, doesn't help us with kids, or doesn't help us with the yard, or doesn't help us with this, and we don't feel like they're part of our lives and working in our lives and affectionate in our lives, then what do we feel about that person? You don't love me. That's how they end up in my office. Yeah. Because they thought that person meant what they said when they stood up there, I love you till death do us part. They did, but they only meant let's start a relationship. But as the relationship started, now I have to find out, do you really love me? Loving me means you will change for me. Loving me means you will accept me. Loving me means I'm not always that looking like this with a white dress, and I don't always look good in the morning, and I don't always have good breath, and I don't always have this, and I snore, and I do all these things. Do you really love me with all the problems and the situations and the circumstances and the insecurities that I have? Do you really love me? That's what we have to prove. We've got to prove, do you really love me? And now in God's relationship, it works the same way. I went to an altar years ago and I said, Father, I am sorry. I confess my sins. Will you accept me into your family? And we started a relationship. That's what I say to people all the time. I said, look, at the age of 8 years old, I started a relationship with God. But if you'd have asked me at 8 years old what love meant, how He loved me, how much He loved me, I didn't understand. Well, He loves me, forgave me of my sins. He loves me, won't let me go to hell. But then as life goes on, when I'm 15, 16, 20, 25, 30, I start to realize what love really is, how He stays with me, how He fights with me, how He won't give up on me, how He never turns His back on me. When others are ashamed of me, He's still standing by me. He says, I will never leave you nor forsake you, but I will be with you to the end of the way. He says, I will stick closer than a brother to you. You won't find a better best friend than me. It ought to be a shame that you're in a marriage and you got a best friend better than your husband or your wife. Why? Because that's what you are supposed to prove. That you can be my best friend. You can be my covering. My strength when I'm weak. My courage when I have none. You can be those things because you truly love me. Now, if I can prove those two things, if I can prove those two things between us, now what it does when somebody says, will you relinquish yourself? Well, of course I will. I'd die for Elise. I'd take a bullet for her and any of my kids. Why? Because we have been in relationship and we have established love. Now the next normal step in it is that I will relinquish myself into the relationship. I will relinquish myself. I will give up myself. Because I trust you. You see how we do this in church? We do it backwards. We tell people that don't know God, haven't walked with God, you just need to quit all this and quit all that and stop doing this and stop doing it. And they do it, and it almost destroys them. Because they don't have a relationship on one side, and now you just tell them to give up all the relationships on the other. How long can you live in a house alone? You ever see young Christians just kind of walk around like they ain't got no more friends? And they'll come to me and I say, I got to get involved somewhere, Brother Lott. You got to find me something to do. And the sad part is, what can they do? They're not far enough along to teach. You're not going to put them on the stage. You don't know what they're going to do next week. Well, but you told me to trust God. I'm totally sold out to God. Well, now let's walk the relationship out. Let's get to phase three. And phase three is simply this, as you're in Galatians 2, verses 19 and 21. For I through the law am dead to the law, that I might live unto God. I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who did what? Who loved me and did what? Now listen to how Paul describes this. He said, this is the reasoning by which I can give myself to Christ. When somebody says, I don't see how you can serve God, I don't see how you can go to church, I don't see. That's simple. That's the easiest question in the world for me. I can do it very easily. I can give all that I have very easily because of this one fact. Because He first loved and He was willing to give Himself. Because of that, I am willing to give whatever I need to give for His sake. But if you'd asked me to give everything and I don't know if He really loves me, and I'm not even really sure He died. I got a lot of friends that keep saying He was just all a fluke anyway. Now we've got a problem. I cannot fully establish amid the letting go of me that God's plan is sound. Some of you in this room are right there this morning. You struggle to wonder whether God's plan is actually a sound plan. It's a good plan. It's one that's good enough to lay down your life and trust it. It's one that's good enough to go against the tide of everybody else and say, I can't do that. I have to do it God's way. If we don't establish the relationship and then we don't establish that God's love remains, it makes it impossible to be able to stand and then say, okay, I trust you. Let's bring this thing back to John now and let me show you how it all fits together and I'll be through. Go with me to the very next verse, verse 38. John 6, verse 38. And verse 39. Or 68 and 69, my bad. I'm all over the place today. I'm close. I'm just missing a number here and there. Then Simon Peter, one of the 12 that was still standing there when Jesus had just said what? Are you going to leave me too? Here's what Simon Peter looks at him and says. Lord, to whom shall we go? What is that establishing? Is there anybody that Peter has a better relationship with than Christ? Is there anybody that Peter's got on the side so if Jesus kicks him off, he can run over there? Peter has eliminated all of the options. Peter looks at Jesus and says, Jesus, where else could I go? There are times in your life to where you've got to make sure there's no other attachments, because if you had somewhere else to go, you do. You'd go. I want to give you one of the key things that we did at All Seasons years ago. We didn't take transfers into All Seasons. When I first moved here, it was like five or six churches that are within about 20 miles of each other. And the going thing is to, if they tick you off at one church, you just move your membership to the... And then when you get ticked off or somebody talks to you there, you can go to somewhere. And so we just killed that revolving door. We just said, if you come here, you've got to go through membership class and you've got to learn what we do and how we do it. And you'd be amazed how many people wouldn't do it. I've been in the church for 40 years. I'm like, well, great. Not this church you had. But it was all done for this very specific reason. It's because here's how most churches cannot grow. It's because if I'm a pastor and you come to my church, well, I got two things to worry about. Well, first off, I got the church you left, because there's always going to be people calling you and telling you, you know, you need to come back. You should come back. And then there's going to be other churches and other places that's always going to come and say, you need to come try over here. I know none of y'all have ever lived that or had to deal with that. I'm just telling you how it normally works. So most pastors spend most of their time trying to keep happy the... because please don't leave me. We'll do better. And so I decided a long time ago that either it's just going to be relationship or nothing at all. You're going to come because you want to be in relationship and you want to be part of, and you want. And if you don't, God bless you. It's not built on a religious system. It's not built on me stoking your fire to make you feel like it's worth going to church. It's relationship. It served us pretty well. I found a lot more people that want to be in good, healthy relationships than I did that those that want to go to church. You can go by the golf club today, the golf course, and find a bunch of people that don't want to go to church. You can watch your yards today as you're driving home, watch how many people are mowing their grass today and doing things today because they don't want to go to... they done church. Two or three or four of them. What they're longing for is relationship. They're longing for a place to fit, a place they belong, a place where they can grow, a place where they know that we can do this. And Peter says, Jesus, I don't have anywhere else to go. You are it. I don't have a friend on the side. I don't have another place to run to. This is it. Imagine how awesome All Seasons could be if everybody got in their mind that this was the only church in the world and you either got to make it better or it's just going to stay sorry. Man, I got to help. So what happens is Peter, because he says this, can step into phase two. And Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words eternal life. You're the only one that can save us. You're the only one that can do this. You're the only one that can keep us. Verse 69. And we believe and are sure, because we've been in relationship with you, because we've walked with you, because we've spent time with you, we are sure of this one thing. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. You learn things when you're in relationship that other people don't. Peter did not understand drinking his blood. Peter didn't understand no more than anybody else eating his flesh. But he understood this. I have been with you long enough that if you say that's what I got to do, then somehow I'll make it. Because I got nowhere else to go, nowhere else to run to. There are many times in your life that you will live a good Christian life just simply because of that process. It's hard to get drunk when you don't have no friends that drink. Think about it. It's hard to do drugs when you don't have nobody's house to go over it does drugs. It's a whole lot easier to do things when the only relationship you've got is the one you've got with God, so that if you have a bad day, there ain't but one person to run to and complain to it about. I remember when my best friend in the seventh grade died. And I've told this to several different schools and asked to speak. His name was Bodie Eubanks, and talked about how he died in a car wreck. In the eighth grade, he played tackle, I played tight end, and we were best buds. First time I ever had to be a pallbearer. Shouldn't have to be a pallbearer in eighth grade. But I remember when they told me the news and I was standing at my house and I didn't know what to do. You ever get like that sometimes? You just, maybe you get the bill in the mail, maybe you get a situation, a phone call, or the doctor says something, you just don't, it's like, you turn every door, you just, what do I do? And I remember all I could come up with in my mind was just go walk. And I just started walking into the woods that we had around by us, and I just didn't have nobody else to talk to but him. And that may seem simple to you, but I'm 43 years old now. And do you know where I go to? I still go to the woods. People ask me why I like to tent camp, and I think it started back in the eighth grade when I didn't know what to do, I just learned to walk with him. When I didn't know what to say, and I didn't know how to fix it, I just learned to start walking, start talking. Just share your heart. Sometimes when I'm in those woods, I can't even hardly see because of the tears. Sometimes there's certain stumps that I've got at certain places that I've always sat there, and when I get to them, I always stop and I pray at them. We meet at those places. In fact, if you don't believe it, you won't believe this. I had a guy going through a situation in my church a few years ago, and I didn't tell anybody about anything about where I go and different things like that, and he came to me that Sunday morning when I was back, and he said, I was praying for you. And he said, God's been working on me. He said, Pastor, you're not going to believe this. He said, but about 6 o'clock in the morning, last Thursday, he said, I had to go outside. And when I went outside, he said, I could see you. And he said, you were kneeling at a stump. And he said, I could tell you it was a tree that had fell over. And I knew exactly which one. There's another tree that lays there that I put my knees on. It wasn't just like a stump. It was a certain way that it looked. He said, I could see it. And he said, I knew you were praying for me. And I thought, God, sometimes I don't realize how much you see. And how many people see it. We walk in relationship that establishes love. And then the love that we have eventually causes us to be willing to give all. That's the way it works. That's why when I look at my teenagers, I tell them, just keep chasing, keep reading, keep doing. Why? Because you're going to learn one day that it's worth all to give to Him. You don't just do that. You walk with Him and you talk with Him, and one day, the relationship's worth more than anything. That's what Peter understood. We believe and are sure Thou art the living Christ, the Son of the living God. Verse 70. I want to show you one thing about yourself and your journey. Verse 70 and 71. Jesus answered him and said, verse 70, Have not I chosen you 12, and one of you is a devil? Can I tell you one thing about God? Is that He has not revealed everything about you yet. He has not revealed everything you still got to go through yet. My journey with Him has produced what it is right now. But if Jesus was to look down and speak audibly to me right now, He would throw something in there and say, Tim, just wait till next year. What's next year? Oh, you'll see. Because not only is He in my now, but the reason I can trust Him with my whole life is because He's also in my tomorrow. He's already planning my tomorrow and planning my future. He's not just walking with me through my trials. He's walking ahead of me and making the path smooth where I got to walk. If you're in this place today, there's only one word that sums it up and just says it. Either you have it or you don't have it. When we talk about being in relationship, being in love, when we talk about is God's plan good enough for us, number three. Can I look at my relationship right now with Christ and can I say, I'm undaunted? Am I undaunted right now in my relationship? Or does the stuff that go on around my life, does it cause me problems? Does the fact that I really don't know if He really loves me or not, does it cause me problems? Is it the fact that I know there's things I want to do and God keeps pulling me other? Is His plan better than mine? Or is it causing me problems? My whole life is summed up in those three statements. Does God really want a relationship with me? Yes. Does God really love me? Yes. Is God's plans for me good enough for me to give all that I have to trust Him in them? Yes. That pretty much sums up any problems I'd ever have in my life. And if you have problems this morning, they're not coming from the outside. They're coming from the inside. Somewhere in that process, whether it's you don't know God really loves you, you don't feel like you're in a good relationship with Him, or you don't feel like His plan is good enough for you, you got a better way of doing it than He does. One of those three is what's causing you problems. God shows up this morning and says, let's move beyond this. Let's move beyond this. Will you stand? The most difficult times in life is when Jesus brings something in front of us that we're not comfortable with or used to. Maybe right now God has put you in a situation, a place. He's put you in a job. He's put you in a marriage. He's put you with kids. You're saying, God, this is not the way I planned. This is not how I saw it. I don't understand what You're doing. And God says, can You be undaunted even when I don't make sense? Can You trust Me right now to do what You know to do even when You don't understand what I'm doing? Yesterday, the ladies went to a ladies' conference.